There's a striking juxtaposition in the sports and entertainment world this week. Formula One has confirmed the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix will proceed despite the ongoing Middle East conflict, while simultaneously, Abu Dhabi's hotel occupancy rate has fallen from 80.3% in the first half of 2025 to 66.8% in the first half of 2026. That's a nearly 14 percentage point decline in 12 months, and Dubai's decline, according to Seabree data, was roughly double that figure.
The F1 confirmation is worth examining carefully, because it reveals how the sport has locked itself into a gulf revenue model that's now very difficult to exit even when conditions deteriorate. Abu Dhabi pays among the highest hosting fees in the Formula One calendar, figures in the range of $65 to $75 million annually have been reported for the Yas Marina circuit. That kind of contractual commitment doesn't yield easily to geopolitical discomfort.
And the Bahrain and Saudi races that were deferred, the reporting mentions the total commercial cost of those deferrals, which we don't have the exact figure for. But the implication is that F1 is already absorbing significant financial pain from the regional conflict, confirming Abu Dhabi might be as much about limiting further losses as it is about confidence in the region's stability.
What I find analytically interesting is the disconnect between the race confirmation and the hospitality data. Formula One events are partly televised spectacles and partly tourism drivers. The sponsorship and broadcast revenue from the race itself is relatively insulated from whether hotel rooms are full. But the ancillary economic argument that hosting F1 boosts the local economy, fills hotels, attracts high net worth visitors. That argument collapses when occupancy is at 66.8%.
The Department of Culture and Tourism Abu Dhabi has apparently stopped releasing visitor data since the start of the year, which is itself a data point. When a government tourism body goes quiet on its own metrics, you can reasonably infer those metrics aren't telling a favorable story.
The contrast with the US Open is sharp and worth dwelling on. Here you have a major sporting event that's leaning into player empowerment, not running from it. The USTA has announced a record $108 million total purse for the 2026 US Open. And it's happening in a context where players have been actively applying pressure, and in some cases threatening protest action over prize money distribution.
Ben Shelton's quote is genuinely notable. He said, "Having a seat at the table with the Grand Slams is something we have wanted for some time." That language, a seat at the table, reflects how tennis players have been positioning themselves in a much more organized, labor movement-style frame over the past couple of years. The creation of a player council with actual Grand Slam engagement is structurally new.
Jessica Pegula's comments are equally interesting from a strategic standpoint. She told Front Office Sports that players were withholding judgment on whether to actually protest until they could evaluate the substance of the engagement, not just the optics. That's disciplined. It suggests the player council isn't just a PR exercise on the player's side. They're treating it as a genuine negotiation.
Let me put the $108 million figure in context. In 2016, the US Open purse was $70 million. So in 10 years, it's grown by 54%. Meanwhile, player costs, travel, coaching, physiotherapy, equipment have grown significantly as well, and the disparity between top 100 and outside 100 earnings has been a consistent complaint. The question players have been raising isn't just about the headline number, it's about how the money is distributed down the draw.
And that's where the real tension lives. A $108 million purse sounds enormous, but if the bulk of it concentrates in the second week, quarterfinalists, semifinalists, finalists, then a first-round loser at a Grand Slam, who might spend $15,000 on travel and coaching for 2 weeks, is still not breaking even from the prize money alone.
The parallel to the broader labor moment we're seeing across professional sports is hard to ignore. From F1 driver contracts to tennis player councils to the ongoing restructuring of sports economics in the Gulf, athletes and their representatives are increasingly sophisticated about the business structures around them.